Rick, your dad was, of course, an outstanding sports writer for many, many years. And I wonder, was there anything from him that you learned that helped you be a basketball coach?
Oh, gosh. So much of what I learned from him was just about being a man, being a person that would, hopefully with humility, because he was about as humble as anybody I've ever known. I think his overall philosophy about college athletics in particular was that it's a game, and that's the way he treated it. And I've tried to remember that as I coach teams, that one of the things I would tell kids in recruiting and their parents was, if you come here and it's not enjoyable, if it's not fun to play basketball for us, then I'm not doing my job. So I just think he always looked at it that way, and he didn't suffer bullies very much. I can still remember we went to the banquet one year, and Bobby Knight spoke early in his career at Indiana, and he was a friend of Coach Mears. Bobby Knight was. And he got up, and of course he ran down sports writers and officials and women in general. And so at the end of my dad's little story about the banquet, he said, Bob Knight, head coach in Indiana, was last night's speaker. In the past, there's been some very good speakers at this banquet, but last night was not one of them. So I don't know if you get away with that today or not, but he didn't like that kind of personality. He didn't like guys that boasted about themselves, thought they were self-important.
You had the basketball court named after you at Belmont Saturday. What did that mean to you?
Well, everything. I mean, whatever might come your way after a long career where you win a few games and maybe some championships, you're going to have nice honors. But 33 years in one place and to feel like that it was more than just winning games is why they did it, at least the way they presented it. It was a wonderful ceremony that Belmont did a great job with, and I get pretty emotional. It was tough to get through what I had to say because that school means so much to me, and the kids that played for me meant so much to me.
You had great success, and I wonder, how tempted were you to test your skills at a higher level? But at the same time, is there some gratitude that you stayed at one place for that many years?
Oh, I think there's about 99%. The 1% might be cash on hand. I don't know. But by the time that maybe my resume said this guy could coach with some guys at the power conference level, I was mid to late 50s and felt so good about the culture around our basketball program, the kind of young men that we could recruit, the success we were having. Nothing's ever on autopilot, but I just didn't feel like at that age that I needed to take on a whole new, if I was going to get a job, because somebody wasn't doing very good and the program wasn't in very good shape, and that starts a whole nother, and particularly for me, I'm old school dinosaur like in standards and beliefs, and it would probably be a culture change in a big way for a lot of places. So I'm very happy that it turned out the way it did. I coached against some of the best and probably lost more than one against the power conferences, but we won our share, and I feel okay about how I could stack up.
You coached against a player, Ja Morant, that is tearing it up in the NBA. He's a favorite right now to be the rookie of the year in the NBA. What do you remember about his recruitment, if at all, and what do you recall about his progress at Murray State?
Well, I didn't know anything about him, and neither did Murray State. They went to see another kid on that ended up being still playing for them now. It's a junior, really good player, and it was in some back gym, and they just kept noticing Ja Morant, and then his freshman year, he wasn't even freshman of the year in the OVC. He was Terry Taylor at Austin Peay, who's a great player. Got that honor because Ja was sort of a second choice. In fact, our scouting report was go under ball screens, let him shoot all threes he wants to shoot. And I'm so bad with names, but when their star guard left after the senior year and they had one every year, so that's why I can't remember all their names. And we kept hearing in the offseason that all the NBA scouts were showing up and going and watching him and all that kind of stuff, and we didn't get it. But we got it, by watching him last year. We got lucky, and on a really big night on the ESPN nationally televised game at their place, he tweaked his ankle. We managed to beat those guys there, but they got us back in the championship game. I'm pretty amazed at his immediate success because he's not a big, strong kid. I wondered if he could finish against the size in the NBA. But I have never coached against anybody that found teammates and delivered passes in the right place at the right time like he does.
When did you realize he was a special talent?
I think in scouting their games for his sophomore season, you're so wrapped up in your own team, and you've got 20 games before you play a conference opponent. So we would see things, hear things, but I didn't look at Murray State till it was time for us to play Murray State, really. So watching him play three or four games on video, I got it. He was so hard to keep in front of you. So hard. And then when he got by you, if you helped too quick, he found the guy. And if you didn't help, he scored. And he's an exciting guy to watch play.
How unusual is his story, though? You don't always see people just jump to the top like that were so under-recruited coming out of high school.
No, you don't. You just said it. It's real, real, real odd that this happened. But it does go. There's still guys out there. I mean, we had a first round draft choice too, and Dylan Windler. Well, Dylan Windler was totally under recruited until he blew up in the summer prior to his senior year, and we'd already been in and seen him and on the ground floor, and we were able to get him. But he almost flew completely under the radar. And here's a guy that turns into a first round pick.